It's January 10th, 2010, not 2010. Welcome to episode 32 of Digital Outbox. It's a new decade and one that I refuse to say 2000 ever again.
Joining You're 20 me, man, I.
It was got to be. Joining me again, as you can hear, it's Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Did you have a good time over Christmas?
I had a very festive and snowy time, and I'm still having a snowy time now.
Oh, bless. Are you trapped?
I am actually trapped this time.
Upstairs?
No, not just upstairs, but upstairs and downstairs, but yeah. I scoped out the roads earlier to see if I could get out tomorrow, and I definitely can't.
Well, the snow has been pretty bad for everybody.
Indeedy. What yourself?
Snow?
Well, I guess so, yeah. I was just putting it out there, whatever you want to answer on.
I'm fine. Snow's fine. It's starting to thaw. And, yeah, it's a new year, a new decade.
I haven't even made my mind up on whether I'm a 2010 man or a 2010.
Yeah, I never thought about it until I saw the website telling me that it should be 2010. And as soon as I saw the website, I thought, you're right, Mr. Website. I'm going to go for 20.
I'm just finding it a pain in the ass because I keep writing the two zeros, you know, 200, and then having to press the delete key. So my year writing is taking a lot longer.
my pain in the ass is I still write 2009. It takes me about a month before I get it into my head.
So you've still got the pain of writing 2009 and then having to delete the 9 and the 0.
2009, then delete the 09, and then realising it's 2010. So, we've not done a real-life podcast for about 3 weeks. So everybody will be pleased to hear we've got thousands of things to go through.
Millions, I think.
Including all the... I didn't want to say millions. Including all the CES stuff. But we'll go through some UK-specific news first, yeah?
Yeah, let's just rattle through that.
So, first up, launched last Thursday, is a London data store. More than 200 data sets detailing life in London are to be put online by, I think it's putting it on.
I think it is, yes.
It will open on January 29th, and you can get the data in CSV and XML and all that good stuff.
And it's all sorts of data. Let me have a look at the list. But basically, things like crime statistics, alcohol abuse, the number of ambulances called out, just all manner of different things. So the census information, all in an accessible format, so people can play with it effectively.
Definitely. So hopefully, we'll see some interesting mashups and 4IP, which is Channel 4's Innovation for the Public Fund. Is going to back the best ideas with a 200,000 cash pot. So I don't quite know all the mechanics of how that works, but I think if you come up with a good idea and it's something that can, you know, benefit the public at large, they're willing to chuck some cash at you and help you get started.
So I don't know the details. Sounds about right.
Moving on, and this was news to me, but Sky have rolled or in the process of rolling out TweetDeck in their newsroom. So over the next month, TweetDeck's getting rolled out to all the journalists. At first I thought it was a bit surprising, but it turns out Sky has its own Twitter correspondent.
A correspondent just for Twitter?
Just for Twitter. And
what a job description.
Exactly. But her job is now done because it's now everybody is a Twitter correspondent.
I know, she's going to be a little bit peeved, isn't she?
Well, no. And I mean, Sky, the big change for us in 2010 is evolving how social media plays a role in our journalism. We no longer ghettoise it to one person, but are in the process of embedding throughout the whole team. But I think it's really useful. You know, if you look at all, you mentioned the snow at the start of the show, you know, it's a great way of finding out what the score is around the country.
We've said all along that Twitter, some of the information on Twitter used responsibly is actually very, very useful.
Indeed.
And you would trust that a big news organisation would be responsible with that.
So basically saying Sky, listen to us.
Well, they're trying to plumb themselves into to the information that we've got to provide, I guess.
Cool. So I it'll be interesting to see how that actually affects them, whether because they always usually chase after the exclusives first and they put up a nice big text on screen saying it's breaking news. I wonder if we'll have breaking Twitter news from now on.
There's big part of me which sort of, I hope, I don't know, there's, I hate news organizations when they go for speed over all else. You know, it's a bit like, for me, a main computer that goes for boot up speed above all else. It's not the most important thing necessarily. I want accurate information.
There speaks a Windows user. Moving on. Project Canvas has been approved. This is all about getting internet access via a set-top box for your TV.
Yeah, so this is a standard, isn't it, where you can... Yep. Basically, the set-top box then provides access to certain elements of the internet.
Yes. So Project Canvas up to now has included its main owner is BBC, but ITV, BT, Five, Channel 4 and TalkTalk. A couple of the most vocal opponents, definitely Sky. They are... they've got a rage about the whole thing, and I think Virgin are also pretty much against it as well.
So it's, yeah, it's sort of the ones that have already closed down their network via, you know, access method.
Yes.
Are not happy about everyone else doing these innovative things.
No, definitely not. But I'm interested.
I think good. I'd sock it to them.
Oh, absolutely. Sock it to Sky. I mean, I mean, it's just something I think could be really powerful. I mean, it's something we saw at CES was a lot about getting, you know, widgets on your TV and doing a lot more with your TV.
I think a lot of the anger comes from the fact that, you know, Sky obviously don't get the money from the license fee, which obviously enables them, BBC, to innovate and others to come on board with them.
Yeah.
But whether there's anything to stop Sky getting on board with the same project, I don't know. I don't think so.
No, there's not. It's just they want to do their own thing.
Well, they want to be able to lock you down and monetize it in their own way, don't they? That's,
yes. So
you pay some money, takes choice, basically.
Indeed. So hopefully over the next year, we should start to see some more about the actual technology and what it can do for us.
I mean, I'm looking forward to being able to have, you know, access to the internet through the TV.
Definitely. Definitely. So a new statistic came out just before Christmas that video games are now bigger than film in the UK. So more money was spent in video games than in films, including both trips to the cinema and films on DVD. So that was figures compiled for the Daily Telegraph.
But I thought games were only for kids, Ian.
But they are.
Isn't that what the politicians keep telling us?
Indeed. Well, it's either for kids or it's maniacs that are about to, you know, go and shoot people.
Well, that's true, actually. So we must all be mass murdering, you know.
Well, I am. You can speak for yourself. But it's just the amount of money. In the 12 months to end of September, $1.73 billion spent in video games, which is massive. And for film, it was $1 billion.
And this is a recession year.
Yep. And for film, it was $1 billion and a further $200 million spent on film titles released on DVD and Blu-ray. So the only bigger market is TV and music.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. If you've been part of the game industry or game... You know, just being a gamer, being part of the community, you know that your fellow gamers aren't all, you know, little kids. It's you know, the people who play these games are generally male, around 30. They've got a lot of money to spend.
Yeah, my only frustration is the way that the media portrays it. You know, so if I pick up a Sunday newspaper, you know, if I go to like an arts or culture section or whatever you want to call it, they'll always have film, they'll always have music, they'll almost always have, you know, theatre as well as TV, and just no mention whatsoever of games.
It's and if there's a game there, it's like out of 3 stars and it's the paragraph for a game review or whatever.
And it's the same on TV, you know, so you've got music shows and lots of music channels, you've got lots of talk about film and just very little about games.
Yeah, and so they introduce the this is the Xbox 360 console from Microsoft.
and it's
how many homes did they say Xboxes are in now? It's a ridiculous number of homes.
It's just they didn't say number of homes. What they've said is number of consoles. In 2008, there was 13.5 million, but there's now, over the last year, it's now shot up to 25 million.
So, but we never used to say how many TVs were in each home. We just said how many TVs there were and sort of extrapolated.
So there's not enough consoles for 9 out of every 10 households in the country to have one. What they didn't say was that's with people with 5 Xboxes because they've all broken. But, our final story before we just move headlong into gadgets is Orange have to bring us HD calls.
HD calls? What are they?
I have no idea. Seemingly it's based on a 3G facilitated service, and it'll be trials will start early this year, and it will be a far better quality of call.
So effectively, it's using the 3G data bandwidth to increase the bitrate, I imagine, of your recording.
Yes.
But you need new handsets to do it.
Need new handsets, and only be on certain handsets, and I've tagged it with HD, which just sounds terrible.
Well, and you need better networks to support all the extra data, I'm sure.
Yeah. I can't see O2 doing this very soon.
No.
Bless them.
Bless their cotton socks.
So the rest of our podcast is probably dominated by a roundup of CES. But I don't know how you felt, Chris, but I felt CES was itself dominated by two things. One was the Nexus One, which had been basically all the details leaked out before Christmas, but then was actually launched January 5th out with CES.
Yeah, so they weren't even at CES, were they?
No,
they were.
Another one seemed to be the whole industry's obsession with a tablet from Apple.
Get over it.
So let's go through the Nexus One. This is a lovely looking phone.
This is the Google phone.
This is the Google phone, but it's not manufactured by Google.
No, it's HTC manufactured, isn't it?
Yes. So they're still saying that they went into partnership with them and they don't want to become a hardware supplier. The specs are excellent. So that's an OLED display. The resolution's really good. So it's a 480x800. And I think everybody that's used the phone or has reviewed the phone, as you said, the screen is one of the best features about it.
I've heard reports that it's maybe not quite as good as the Droid / Milestone, but very nearly on a par.
Yeah. It also has a 1 gigahertz Snapdragon processor.
Which is huge in a phone.
Yes. You know, so to get a 1 gigahertz chip, which and to me means that we'll probably see a new iPhone this year that's probably going to be hitting the same kind of specs as well.
I mean, to keep that thing cool in a device that small, it must be a headache, to say the least.
Well, I was listening to a podcast this morning. They were saying that battery life is a slight issue and the Droid's battery life is far better. Not far better, it's just better than the Nexus. But it's no surprise. You know,
but the Nexus has a swappable battery there, doesn't it? Which is a definite plus.
Yep, but you're driving a bigger screen with a faster processor.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be an issue. It's still got the kind of standard 4-button physical hardware buttons at all. Android phones, I think, have, or most of them have anyway. Also, it's a trackball, which I just find a bit bizarre when you've got a touchscreen.
I agree, but I've said before, I want inputs on these phones for gaming and alternatives.
Yeah. So some of the unique features on this, it's actually got two mics, and it does some noise suppression, which, according to all tests, works really well. And I thought a couple of software features... Some of the demos were a bit weak, I thought. They showed you Google Earth, which was like, fair enough. They showed you live wallpaper, which I thought looked really annoying.
What's it live wallpapering with?
You select a wallpaper and as you interact, so if you've got a water background, as you touch the screen, it ripples and does all sorts of that nonsense. Yeah, well, I would just be the first thing I turn off, I think. The one thing that I thought was a gimmick and actually worked really well was the voice input.
Yeah, and it sort of seemed to open up a lot of possibilities that you don't really think about in this.
Yeah, sure. So the big thing about Android 2.1 is that the voice input is on any text box. So it's not just limited to a specific application that supports it, or you know maybe with the Google Voice Search that we've got on the iPhone right now, it's any text box you can voice input.
And it makes sense. Why faff around with an on-screen keyboard that nothing doesn't really work and likes?
The demo worked well, and it's actually the voice translation's not local. It's actually done in the cloud. So it's actually sent off returned. So they're saying as more and more people use it, it should get more and more accurate. And interestingly, I did try the iPhone app, the Google iPhone app, which I hadn't tried for ages, and the voice was a lot better than it was when I first downloaded it.
Sending it to the cloud, though, does come for me with a bit of a, you know, it seems like that would be a performance problem, especially in low networked areas.
I mean, certainly when I tried it on the iPhone, it works really quickly.
Okay.
The limitation of the iPhone being that you're looking for short search inputs, so you're actually limited to the amount of time you can use it. So the big thing before this came out was going to be this was going to change the market and be disruptive, but it's not really. It's unlocked without a service for $529, or you can get it from T-Mobile for $179. They're also shipping to UK if you want the unlocked version now.
When you say unlocked, they're all unlocked as far as I'm aware. You're just talking about being subsidised by being on a...
Yes.
Having a contract.
Yes. And seemingly, Vodafone's statement is it'll be with them in the UK in a few short weeks. I don't know the difference between a few weeks and a few short weeks, but there you go.
I guess they're thinking the snow's going to have knocked out a couple of those weeks.
I still think the bigger thing was the fact that if you go to google.com/phone, that's now their marketplace for phones. And I just think over the year you're going to see this take off. I'm sure you're going to see a whole lot of Android devices getting sold via that website.
And I guess that placates the other manufacturers as well who are working with the platform.
Yeah.
Who never really were that keen on Google having their own version.
Well, I watched their little announcement live, and it was interesting, some of the questions coming from the audience. It was a kind of selected audience of the kind of usual kind of tech and gadget bloggers. And one of the questions was, you know, how do you, with phones in general, if you look at Nokia, they've always had maybe every year, they've got a release of new hardware. And that's why traditionally you've had, you know, the early adopters are always going 12-month contracts, pick up the new hardware, and they're always satisfied. With Google and with Android in particular, you know, you had the Hero came out, and a couple of months later the Droid came out, and a month later the Nexus came out, with each one being, this is the best Android device you can buy.
Yes, it's moving so quick, how do you keep up?
Yeah, you know, so if I've picked up a Droid, almost instantly I've been bettered by a Nexus using a version of Android that I've not got.
Although I don't think that's strictly the case at the moment, and also I think that the Droid keep up with the implementations of the operating system, because I think one of the problems with the Hero is they added their own software over the top, which meant they had to keep their software up to date with the actual Android platform itself.
But I think Droid do have those kind of issues as well, because the Motorola guy or the Motorola representative didn't turn up to the actual Nexus launch until late on in the question and answers. And he was asked about this, and all he said was, well, we've got our own answer coming soon. You know, so they see it as obviously a competition, but using a common software platform.
It's more like the problem that you get with, you know, when you're buying a PC. You know, if you buy a PC today, it's going to be bettered tomorrow. You've just got to make your purchasing decision based on what you need today and what you think is going to be satisfactory going forward.
Yep.
And I guess it's going to be the same with the phone. I mean, the whole phone market is moving forward at a pace now. Apple have kicked everyone into going, and that's good news. But it does mean that one phone a year seems quite slow now.
Well, it seems slow, but at the same time, when I know how I feel. I just want to buy one phone, and that's me for a year.
But what you mean is you want to buy one phone and then not feel like you're missing out.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely.
But I don't think that's going to be the case very much going forward.
Oh, I'm not so sure.
You're going to miss out.
I think the Droids and the Nexuses, they've got the kind of, you know, I don't think something's going to come out Android-wise. It's going to be much better than them, you know, in the next sort of 2, 3, 4 months.
But you've seen, I don't think even people would have thought it would have got this far so quick. So I'm not so sure. I think if Apple only still release one a year, you're still going to be left with that feeling of missing out, but not necessarily an Apple phone. You'll be missing out on another platform.
Yeah, maybe. I'll be honest, I've still not seen a phone that would make me want to switch. Nexus One's been the closest, but even then I've got some issues with it.
When I come to the end of my contract, I think that's in July, I think... that's my iPhone contract. I think I'm going to have options, and I'm going to definitely look around. Whether I, you know, depends what Apple come up with, I guess, isn't it?
Mm. And just when you mention contracts, and just maybe swing off topic, but O2 are now doing a simplicity for iPhone contract, which I've now switched to. So my 18-month contract's done. Originally, my plan when I bought my 3GS was at this point I've moved to simplicity, which would give me 600 minutes, 1200 texts. It would give me the unlimited 3G data downloading, but it wouldn't give me visual voicemail, and it wouldn't give me the free cloud Wi-Fi. But they've now brought out a simplicity for iPhone that specifically for £20 a month gives me the same as the simplicity, but also includes visual voicemail and the cloud Wi-Fi as well. So I've now moved to that.
There you go.
And it's
that'd be useful to have on other phones like the Nexus as well, wouldn't it?
Yep, and it's a 30-day contract. So I can basically bail out whenever I like.
So yes, it's ideal for your next gadget needs.
Yes, indeed. So next gadget needs, let's rattle through some tablet talk.
More tablet talk.
I feel it's a shame that Shaquille's not here, because he is Mr. Apple and Mr. Tablet. And I'm sure he'll be back.
He is the physical embodiment of all of the rumours and the expectation, the excitement.
Does that mean he has 10 inches? Sorry. That had to be done. So just before Christmas, and it was I don't think anybody's got any invites yet, but everybody seems to be saying it's definitely happening. But Wednesday, the 27th of January, seems to be the day that Apple will finally announce what is the tablet, the slate, whatever it is they're doing. Whole load of stuff around it. Selected app developers are working on applications already, new beta versions of the development software is looking at taking, you know, apps currently, you know, rendered for the current iPhone screen and increasing the, you know, blowing them up and making them still very usable. And whether that's a new iPhone with higher res screens or whether it's with iSlate, nobody knows. And just when I mentioned Slate, so Slate seems to be the name that everybody's talking about. So much so that Microsoft announced their Slate, which
into that, won't we?
But. Yeah. So, but this totally dominated CES. So many people were just rattling around, talking about their tablets or Slate devices.
I think this is the thing that's dominating the community's mind. It's not necessarily what was dominating most of the stands.
I don't know. There were so many either e-readers or software for reading magazines or slaty tablet devices.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. Yes, I take that back. You're right.
Yeah,
3D TV and e-readers were the two big ones, weren't they?
Yeah, and I don't know. I can't wait for the actual announcement.
The longer it goes on, we'll probably mention it later, but Microsoft did show two what they called slates, effectively small tablet PCs running Windows 7, and no one cares. And no one cares, but firstly, because they don't know what Apple are going to offer.
No.
But also, I think no one cares because no one really wants them.
Well,
they might think they want them, but I don't think they really do.
It's back to this. Apple have built this up. I'm saying it's Apple has built it up, and they have drip-fed bits of information as well, but the community's built this into a big thing now. You know, and you just feel that there's nothing they can announce that can surely match up with that expectation.
Well, no. I can't see it. I mean, maybe I'm here to be surprised, but no, I don't know. I'm still sceptical. Especially at the price point that people keep banding around.
I may as well confess, I'm now just partly sceptical. And the reason I'm only partly sceptical is that alongside picking up a Drobo, I've picked up my Mac Mini over Christmas for under the TV.
Yep.
And the plan was to just go for a laptop and replace a desktop and the laptop with a new laptop, and that would be me sorted. But there's just a little bit of my head saying maybe I should wait to 27th.
I could be an early adopter.
If I wait till 27th, maybe it's not a laptop I need. Maybe it's a new desktop and a slate. I feel like it's a disease.
It creeps into your psyche and it becomes everything you want it to be. It's like, I don't know. I'm a temptation demon, isn't it?
I don't know.
I can be whatever you want me to be.
It's just one of these things. I've always had a weakness for new gadgets, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But
please don't buy one until it's actually been announced.
Oh, well, I've not. not physically. In my head, I might have.
Yeah.
So we've mentioned CES. Will we maybe take a leaf through some of the, I guess, the kind of bigger stuff? CES is massive. I mean, my Google Reader's just been getting hammered this week with all my feeds. Just couldn't keep up with most of it.
Yes.
Well, we've just mentioned Microsoft. Let's start off there. So they had an hour and a quarter long keynote, which said absolutely nothing. And
as we've come to expect from Balmore, really.
But
quite noisy, but not really saying a lot.
And I did my duty. And, you know, basically for you podcast listeners out there, I watched it so you didn't have to.
And I have to say that I haven't watched it all the way through because I only gave myself half an hour, and actually, yeah, hour and a quarter wouldn't fit into half an hour.
I felt quite sorry for them because they had a power cut before it even started, so they were down for 20 minutes.
I don't think we can blame that completely on them, but
it's not at all. But I felt quite sorry for them because some of the demos didn't work.
They blew up their big screen, didn't they?
Some of the audio was a bit off when you started listening to it. You know, the audio was really low, and then just about halfway through, I mean, obviously somebody realised what was wrong, and it just got pumped right up.
Ah, that's why I had to have my volume quite high then.
And I was listening to it in the headphones. I was like, yeah. Oh, he's loud. So they went through some of their, you know, Xbox was actually first up, just saying how good it is and sales are looking good. Bing was mentioned, and as we have said, it's been only introduced last year, and it's got a pretty good market share already, in technology wise and certainly results wise it's looking good. They focused on the car, saying it's a growing market, but that was like,
I think that's more maybe US focused. They've had things in their cars for a while now, haven't they? Their satellite type access
and then they mentioned Zune, which again is just purely US, which is a bit of a shame.
Although I think they haven't announced it to go worldwide. I'm not absolutely sure about that.
Oh, I missed
maybe
that.
I'm just talking rubbish.
No, if they have, I've missed that.
Okay.
And I'm not really fussed.
I could be talking rubbish.
Yeah. And also, they mentioned Windows Mobile and just said more next month. And I was like, yeah, well, good luck with that. Windows 7. So that was definitely a massive success. And that was the interesting thing about the keynote. A lot of it was all about, you know, how good we are, and didn't really talk a lot about, you know, where they're going.
But to be honest, that's exactly what I felt about the Apple keynote, third quarter last year. It was all about who we are and what we're about, because I guess Microsoft have got a lot to shout about as well. You know, the Xbox is probably the class of the consoles, and it's done very, very well, and it's innovating. So it's a big success. Bing has been a big success where people didn't think it was going to be. Zune was, you know, a good product. And Windows 7 was a huge success. So they've got a lot to shout about, but they didn't shout about it in a very good way, as far as I'm concerned.
No. So the rest of their keynote was about a 20-minute section in the middle when they went through different, you know, hardware, laptops, desktops, netbooks, and it was all a bit meh. Some of them looked really nice, others were a bit like, yeah, very good.
And that's the problem with not having a range of that you can call your own, isn't it?
No,
you
know, exactly.
He's just picking. I mean, I guess they're trying to do the equivalent of showing off your new and sexy products, but
yeah,
when it's not even them, it's, you know, they're just the operating system on
exactly
it.
And they showed some software. So there was an ebook reader called Blio, which looked quite nice, but it's going to be out in Mac as well. So again, it just felt a bit of a weak demo. And they showed you an Office demo and doing some collaboration with 2010, which was a bit lame. They showed you Bing Maps, and I think Bing Maps, it was the new version that we talked about in December. That looked really nice. They showed a nice demo of a PC recording 4 HD streams at once,
which is pretty impressive.
And then he pulled out his Windows Mobile phone and was playing it back on it. But again, it didn't really work very well, and it was all a bit kind of, oh, my phone's not right. And then they were focusing on media everywhere, you know, so using media and TV and the computer and the phone and the Xbox. And then they also brought back Microsoft Media Room. And I remember this from about 2-3 years ago, and they were talking about how BT were about to roll this out. It was all IPTV. And it's still, I mean, they showed you and it looked nice, but who cares?
So what gave us a synopsis? Because I'd not heard of it before.
Well, it's basically, instead of about 3 years ago, they talked about, you know, we've got this Microsoft Media Room version 1. TV is going to be over your IP stream, over your network stream, rather than, you know, over the airwaves. Gives you far more flexibility, you know, built into, or it's baked into Windows. What they showed was Media Room 2 being demoed, and it's plugged into Xbox. So I think they've partnered up with a couple of providers in America, so you can get your IPTV on your Xbox. But again, it all felt really, you know, small beer.
Because things have moved on.
Yeah.
Getting video streamed through the internet is no longer a big deal.
Nope, who cares? We mentioned already, they then said, here's some Slate PCs that we've been working on. And I just wonder, if there was all the rumours where hadn't mentioned Slate, would he have said Slate PCs? It just felt really poor.
I can't say I remember ever hearing Slate before. Someone sort of touted that Slate might have been the new buzzword, and everyone went, "Oh, that's quite a good name."
And what was more impressive, the touch demo that he tried to do Field as well on it, Nelok. And thankfully that was it. The rest was all actually about some Xbox that, you know, they're predicting the Xbox is going to be its biggest year so far, 2010, which I was, as soon as they said that, I was quite surprised because I was like, how, what's happening? I just couldn't think. But
yeah, I'd be surprised if it was. But then again, PS2 is still the second most used, I think, console, even above the PS3. And that's used as in number of hours played on it.
Yep.
Xbox is number one. I think PS2 is number two, and that's incredible.
What they're saying for this year is they're trying to have a hit every month. They're trying to get have a more continual stream of decent, you know, game content throughout the year, which I'll be interested in seeing them doing. I doubt they'll be able to manage it.
And I hope some months they'll be releasing new sort of channels in the dashboard. I mean, they've got their community and their environment set up now. They need the deals. They need iPlayer.
What they were talking about was January Mass Effect 2. February, Splinterville Conviction, and then it went on to spring. So they've got an exclusive first availability on the Modern Warfare 2 expansion packs, so that'll be first on Xbox. And also in spring they've got Fable 3, Crackdown 2 and Alan Wake, which they said was a new genre, Alan Wake, psychological action thriller.
But I'm pretty sure that isn't the same as all your Silent Hills and things like that.
Exactly. I was looking at it and thinking, he's got a gun and a torch.
Where have I seen that before?
Yeah. What's interesting is they're saying it's more episodic than they've talked about before. So they're talking about how throughout the year they'll have more episodes of Alan Wake released on Xbox Live.
Skeptical. Exactly. As far as more money.
Exactly.
Sell me a blooming game. Don't sell me a shell.
They then had a demo of Halo Reach. So Halo is the kind of last big Halo title from Bungie. What was disappointing was that they didn't actually stream the demo. They said they couldn't show it due to intellectual property issues.
Sounds like rubbish to me.
Yeah. And so you were watching the stream. It cut away and played some cheesy music for about 2.5-3 minutes. And then cut back when the whole audience was whooping and cheering.
Right.
Which was disappointing. So that's out in the fall, but
we've got the multiplayer demo starting spring for anyone who bought ODST,
which I am looking forward to.
So
like
spring's not that long away. We're talking March, April, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly strong start to the year games wise, because even when Bayonetta has just come out, which has got really high reviews, so there's a really strong start.
It's got amazingly high reviews, Bayonetta. I don't know if whether
amazingly
high
reviews on the 360. Average on the PS3, because PS3 is full of flakiness, basically.
Stutters up
and all that kind of good stuff. One other thing that they showed, which I hadn't seen before, was Game Room. So basically, later this year, again, I think it's from spring. Yeah, it is from spring. You're going to have your own personal arcade, which you'll be able to kind of invite your other friends into and let them play on your arcade games that you own.
Now, did it excite you?
No.
It didn't excite me one little bit.
This looked like Sony's Home.
I've never seen Sony's Home, but this is what I imagine that looks like.
Yeah. Well, no, Sony's Home's a bit kind of... no, I won't go into it.
But, I mean, the reason these games are old and you need to wrap them up in this kind of gimmick is because most of them were a bit rubbish.
Indeed.
Not even a bit rubbish, a lot rubbish.
So this is launched in the spring with 30 titles, but they reckon there's 1,000 games coming. Because obviously it only takes a few hundred people to rebuy these things again, and they're making money from them.
Well, you would assume they'd do the same model as the App Store, the iPhone App Store, where, you know, it only costs you 59p or whatever.
Aye, and that's what I think it's going to be. They're going to be dirt cheap, you know, like 100 points or 200 points. You know, and people will buy them. I mean, I'll probably buy a couple just to see what they're like.
And then, well, you'll just remember and be reminded that they're rubbish.
Or I can just fire up MAME and just play them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess the final bit that I think Microsoft's putting all their weight behind is Natal. Still calling it a Project Natal, so I don't know if it's going to be, you know, get a different name come E3. But it's coming this year, out before Christmas. What's with Country 60? And to save a bit of money, they've taken off a chip or two, and it's now using a bit more of the 360's processing power. So 10 to 15% of the 360's processing power is taken up by Natal.
So effectively, you're never going to see a truly graphical masterpiece because there's always using up some of that data, I guess.
That's everybody's take on them saying that. You know, so you're going to you're not going to see like more res games, but I think you're going to see Wii type games initially. Whereas a lot of people were saying, are we going to get Modern Warfare controllable with Natal? And it's like, well, would that make sense?
It doesn't make sense to me. I'm more than interested to see what they do with this. It doesn't get me truly excited.
Okay. Other big manufacturer, Sony. So, and I guess Sony, I guess, represented almost every other TV manufacturer, and it was 3D TVs were just everywhere. And
they are putting so much behind this technology and everyone buying it. They reckon this is going to be their saving grace.
Yeah,
I can't see it.
I don't know. I need to go and give it a good proper test. I still worry about things like sore heads and how practical and also which technology is going to win. Does that make a difference?
What worries me is the fact that even you listen to the community reviews and people who have actually used it, and they're still not convinced. They, you know, they say, yes, it's quite interesting and innovative, and can be quite good. The effect can be quite good. But it's just not what you want to be doing in your lounge.
Exactly.
And that's I don't know. That's what I'm taking my viewpoint from, I guess. But it hasn't excited me. And then sometimes it takes that buzz around it and excitement to actually get people to come on board with it.
I mean, at the moment, I couldn't care less about watching a 3D movie in my house. But I will say that out of all the things that I think about, playing a 3D version of Wipeout does tick some boxes for me.
So they've said, yeah, so for games, but it's still going to be which hardware is going to win out. I mean, you can...
No, absolutely.
Things like the Xbox and the PlayStation can obviously output at a high enough... you know, definition to make this technology work, but you still need, for the majority, you still need some hardware implementation as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're talking $5,000 for a new TV to do something like that.
Yeah, which won't be me.
No.
Won't be me. And I can't even see me buying, I can see me buying a new high-def telly, but I won't be buying a 3D one in the next two, three
But then
years.
Again, but then again, you'd probably just see it as different logos on the bottom of the actual television.
Yeah,
eventually, maybe. When it all matures itself out, it'll just be this TV does this both types of 3D kind of thing.
It just feels too early for me to adopt.
But obviously, they're pushing it. I mean, this is the second CES in a row, isn't it? So last year, we saw them all proposing. This year, they've actually got their propositions out in the market.
This is the first year with actual hardware you can go and purchase.
That's it.
So I think the only disappointing thing was there wasn't too many prices kicking around. So I think we'll start to see that over the next sort of month or two when they actually start to... release. Something else that caught my eye from Sony, they're finally using SD cards and cameras.
I didn't realise they weren't before. I mean,
no, they weren't.
Isn't that just the standard de facto norm?
Unless you're a Sony and it was all memory stick nonsense and all the different types of memory sticks as well.
I remember my old Vaya used to have some weird proprietary memory stick.
Oh, they're a pain in the arse.
Yeah.
One thing that did catch my eye as well was the new highest-end Blu-ray player from Sony, which is the BDP-S770, just in case anybody wants to go and look it up. It's a 3D Blu-ray player, comes with Wi-Fi, Netflix plugged in, so great for Americans, but also will come with a free iPhone app controller downloadable from the App Store. Mm. And there was a few manufacturers actually had iPhone apps acting as controllers, which
makes a lot of sense.
Indeed, it was very impressive. Something else which was quite nice was a Sony Dash, which is a glorified alarm clock come photo frame. 7-inch, $199, and it's running the Chumbi OS. I'm sure I've mentioned Chumbi before. If not, go and Google for Chumbi, and you'll see these little kind of... It's almost like these little connected devices that you can make do what you want. But basically, it's it might do some... Get me some news, play some music, act as my alarm clock, show me the weather, sit me beside a bed or sit in a living room somewhere. But this was a nice version rather than the kind of Chumbi hardware, which can look a bit homemade. Another interesting gadget was an OLED screen, which was actually getting to a size worth watching, 24.5 inches.
Oh, so only just though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's moving so slowly. I guess it's just the cost of the manufacturing these things just
exactly.
doesn't necessarily get reduced by, in fact, just goes up by size rather than, you know.
I just feel we're like 3, 4, 5 years away, it looks like, from OLED ever being an option.
Well, I remember talking earlier in the year, or last year, about the fact that the sizes and their sort of predicted time frames, and it looks like their time frames are right. And I was amazed how long it was. It's going to be like 10 years before they're at the size that we're used to looking at now.
Well, one of the guys that I work with was saying, just at the start of this week when we got back to work, it's like, oh, I'm going to wait till next year when OLED becomes, you know, a screen size worth buying.
No, don't wait out. It's you're going to be waiting 5, 6 years before you and that'll be expensive.
Exactly. And some PS3 news. PS3 will play 3D movies through 3D Bravia, so it's going to have a software update to support the new 3D Blu-ray spec. And also some games. Heavy Rain, February 26th in the UK. God of War 3 is March in Japan. And no mention of GT5.
Surprise, surprise. Is it going to arrive? Is it going to come out? Are they just going to endlessly release these tiny things, games and...
Well, I'm quite happy to have a Mars Bar bet with you about by June.
June?
I was going to say end of the year, but I'll say June to make the bet interesting.
I'll take that.
By end of June, I'll be playing GT5.
Okay.
Ideal. Right, some other... Well, we've only got three others. There's loads actually happened, but the three that, I guess, caught our eyes...
Basically, if you want us to list a whole ton of e-readers, we could. It's just not worth us doing it. If you wanted to us to list the different 3D TVs that are out,
exactly.
we could, but... It's just endless lists, so what's the point?
So the other thing that was kind of, that seemed to be a bit of a trend was the kind of internet enabling of TVs. So either supporting, you know, little widgets or dashboardy type.
Which is
widgets.
Far more exciting. Why don't they concentrate on this?
Skype have also teamed up with LG and Panasonic, so they're going to be able to do 720p video calling from TVs.
Which is a great, you know, why not?
Indeed. And it also being Windows, there's no mention of Mac.
I can't say this is the top priority for the TV in my lounge to have the ability to do that. Nevertheless, I find that technology just a far more interesting use of a big monitor that you've got in your lounge than a 3D picture.
Yeah, I certainly do. The 3D stuff, you know, compared to, you know, getting internet content or news feeds or, you know, weather or anything.
If the TV
like
in your lounge can act like a, you know, a PC and have an, or have an app store that's generic, and just enable, you know, the community will find uses for it.
Definitely.
And if some of that is, you know, a 3D picture, then fair enough. But
definitely. And I guess in the back of that, we mentioned this last year, the Boxy Box finally got unveiled. And I think, to me, this was the best gadget shown at CES. I thought it was really good. Under $200. I don't really care about, you know, what it can do, you know, as in what's in the box. But it's...
It shouldn't matter as long as it can do what
play
you
1080p,
expect it to.
It's supporting to Flash 10.1. Doesn't come with any hard disk in it. Comes with 802.11n. And it comes with a great little remote. Which
the
is
remote
simple.
Was a revelation, wasn't it?
Yeah, the remote, simple in the front, you know, very like the actual old Apple remote. And on the back, a little chat pad, very much like the chat pad in the 360, which should be obvious since it's the same designers that did the chat pad in the 360 that also did this remote. And I hope they sell that separately because I've bought a Mac Mini from the telly and I want
If that could work generically with other things, then suddenly that's a great way of solving that problem of how do you have a keyboard and whatever.
And if you want to see how the Boxy software runs, the Boxy Beta software is now available. So if you go to boxy.tv website and create an account, you can download the software for Windows, Mac and Linux.
That's my only reservation about the Boxy Box. I love the Boxy Box. I think it's great. The only reservation I have is the fact that you could spend another $200 and you would then have a fully fledged PC under your TV that you can then have running Boxy as well as anything else you want to
do.
Yes. And so that's my only reservation.
And as I said, that's what I've done. I've now got my Mac Mini sitting there. So there'll be a number of posts over Digital Outbox, I guess, over the next... I'd love to see over the next week, but realistically, it's over the next
give yourself
month,
a bit longer,
months.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be taking you through, I guess, it's how I'm setting it up and and you know issues that I have and how I get around them and just all the options that I've got for what I want to do. And I'm certainly looking forward to eventually getting it all configured and up and running. I'm pleased with it already, but I'll be more pleased when it's all done.
Yep, looking forward to reading them.
Couple of other very brief topics, and then we'll do some apples, and then we'll do some picks. Kindle DX is on sale worldwide. So very expensive. You get your wireless deal, and I'm sure that's just been announced because Apple's coming out with something.
Yeah, so Kindle DX is just the bigger version of Kindle, basically. So it's huge, but it does cost you a lot, and you'll have to pay import duty and the VAT on it. So you'd be spending, you know, like over 400 quid.
Aye, exactly.
For something that's just to read books. Well, it's up to you whether you think that's worth it.
And just briefly, Chrome OS netbook specs have been released, and they looked excellent.
They did, and I don't want to stretch this out too long, but do you not think that's just far too high a spec for just something that's accessing web apps?
I don't know.
Why does it need all that? It's, you know, it's got touch screen and all sorts. I don't know. For me, that seemed over-specced, and whether they can do that for the price, I don't know. Well, for $300, they're saying it's subsidized.
Yeah, but that's a subsidized, isn't it?
Exactly. So what's the actual unsubsidized hardware, exactly, which is what I'm more interested in.
This is a problem I've also got with the Apple tablet. No, I'm already paying for a wireless contract for my phone. I don't want to pay for a wireless contract for my tablet.
Yeah, and that's...
If I was to buy one.
So, yeah, exactly. So for me, this notebook is quite interesting in that it's got great specs, but I reckon it's going to be well overpriced because I don't want a data contract with it. I want it to be able to sit in my lounge, connect to my Wi-Fi.
Exactly.
That's what I don't want to be able to roam with it. Although, you know, let's wait and see. But that's my thing. I think it's overspecced for what I want that to be.
On to some great Apple news. We'd mentioned the iMac and how it was a lovely machine and it looks great and me and Shaki will want one and we were lusting over one over Christmas and it was all fantastic. Whole load of issues in the forums, but with flickering graphics and also a yellow kind of tinge to the whole screen that people are complaining about as well. So a firmware update came out, which initially seemed to fix problems for a lot of people, and then it started causing image corruption and flickering again. So there's still a lot of people with issues in the forums. And there's also, if you go particularly to Gizmodo and have a look at some of the posts there, certainly a couple of the Gizmodo bloggers are having real issues with the quality of the screen, and they're saying they've got there's an overall, you know, non-uniform colour display, and it's affecting more people than just a handful of moany bloggers.
It's important that they fix this
Definitely.
And, I mean, it's and fix 18. People's expectation, because say for someone like you, this means you're not going to buy one until
it's a £2,000 purchase. It's 1,800 quid. You know, if I go and price up the only one I'm looking at, I ain't going to pay 1,800 quid in something that might flicker or has got a yellow tinge to it that I want to use in my main machine for 3 or 4 years.
And it's going to take quite a long time for them to recover this.
So
they need to do something which does recover it.
Yeah. And I guess the only saving grace I've got an Apple store very close by that I could easily go back and continually take it back and get it sorted and eventually get one that works. But that's not the way I really want to buy hardware, and it's not the way Apple should be selling hardware. A demo on the iPhone, Unreal 3 engine, which was pretty amazing. But until they sort out some sort of better control method, it's still going to be lacking for me.
I've said it all along. Once you put your thumb on the left, you put your thumb on your right, and you have a finger in the middle trying to click things.
Nah,
you can't see anything.
Gone. Your screen's gone. The App Store is now 3 billion downloads gone.
Yes, on our ever increasing download reporting.
Yes,
it's taking shorter and shorter time.
Yep, 9 months the first billion, 6 months the second, and 3 months the third.
Yeah, amazing.
And our final Apple, and this is actual physical Apple Store madness, and it's something I've never noticed, but Apple Stores don't have no smoking signs. Now, legally in the UK, they need them, but they ruin the design of the store, so for every Apple Store in the UK, Apple are paying £50 a day to keep their windows sign-free.
That's amazing, and they pass their cost on for you.
Well,
to be honest, I do fully admire that. You know, that strength of vision that knows exactly what your store wants to look like, and they don't want to ruin it with anything.
Yeah.
A red smoking sign just wouldn't go. Couldn't they just done a... I guess they couldn't have done a grey one, could they? It's just... I mean, that... I mean, that, I guess it's small fry to pay that fine per day. Whether they'll ever be actually forced to do it,
is that not for every Apple store? So if we've got 20 Apple stores in the UK now.
So that's a fair amount every day, isn't it?
So that's a grand a day. So that's 500 grand a year. Sorry, 365 grand a year. It's a lot of money.
Yeah. So it's all passed on to you.
Anyway, don't tell me that. picks. Will I crack on?
Oh, yeah. I do you mind if you want?
I'll crack on. I download quite a bit from newsgroups. And the newsgroup app that I currently use is an app called Unison from Panic. And I was very chuffed to see that Unison 2 came out just after... Was it just after? Yeah, it was just after Christmas. Just after New Year, actually. And I guess the one thing I love about this is just how good it looks. It's an amazing-looking app. If you go to panic.com/unison, and you can just, you know, the newsgroups, if you're not using them, they're, you know, if you use it from a messaging point of view, they're text-based, they don't look very good, it's all a bit clunky, but they've got a, you know, Panic, that their app's always... from a usability and a graphic design point of view, they're always very good. I mean, I use Coda and Transmit as well, and they've put a great front end around newsgroups.
I mean, newsgroup readers in general, and they're very rarely put together well. Well, they're always you almost have to have two news readers on your computer to try and get around the quirks of one or the other.
Yeah, so you've maybe got one.
It does look. This looks like almost like an iPhone-y type interface.
Oh yeah, I used to be, and I must admit, I stopped using newsgroup.
I meant iTunes.
I stopped using newsgroup as a news source. Really, you know, I wasn't going in there and posting anymore. But just the way you're using them in here was excellent. Previously, you always had to have another app to deal with, you know, parring and unparring and radding and all that kind of stuff. Unison 2 now does it all, and it'll also clean up behind you, you know. And one of the really nice things, you can actually, they've got an embedded web browser, so you can hook up, if you're using any websites that support downloading of the NZB files, you can actually embed that inside Unison, so you can do searching from in there, download the file, and it'll just go away and download it all, unpackage it, par it, and then give you a final file in the folder of your choice at the end of the day.
I think we have a responsibility to our community not to advertise things like this anyway, because we want newsgroups to stay hidden. No one knows about them on the internet.
Does that mean when I come to do my post about the Mac Mini and newsgroups, I need to hide it somehow?
Give it a code name.
This is how to use newsgroups post.
But don't tell anyone else.
Yeah. But I highly recommend Unison 2. Now I'm just realizing that I had to pay an upgrade fee, but I don't know how much it costs to buy. I think it's $40. It's $30. So
it's nothing really, is it?
It's nothing. Although
that's the only upgrade. So what's the?
Oh no, that's the full cost upgrade. Okay. Cost was only $18. So I don't know. I just look at software like that. If you're going to use it often, then it's an absolute bargain. Lovely bit of software.
Yeah, I mean, that's nothing compared to the cost for a developer to actually put some of that together. So,
and I must say, it's Mac only as well. Mm-hmm. And if you do look on the Panic site, and I can heartily, heartily recommend Coda and Transmit as well. So that's other sites. In fact, I've got Candy Bar as well.
You're reducing your future pick possibilities here.
Yeah, well, I've got plenty. Don't you worry. Anyway, moving on. Your pick.
Okay, my pick, it's an unusual one today, and more of a ha-ha to people. Now, I read a story on BBC about this website called beautifulpeople.com. And now this is like a dating site.
You've not been thrown out, have you?
Strike social network that you have to be deemed beautiful in order to join up. Now, I've never tried.
Shaki was a member.
Now, over Christmas,
you think, because I'm joking, people as well,
have been,
but yes.
I know, but over Christmas, because people have been putting on the pounds, the community has demanded that people update their profile, and they have been chucking out people who have put weight on over Christmas. So they say up to 5,000 of their members have now been deemed no longer beautiful because of their Christmas binging. And I just think part of the terms and conditions of this site should be that if that's you that's got chucked out, you are publicly named and shamed and your profile picture is put up there so that everyone can laugh at you and look at how unbeautiful you are now. So that was my pick for this week, with the 5,000 people that I want to go. So that's my pick for this week.
You nasty, cruel man.
Oh, I know. It made me very happy. It just did.
And
I hate the site, by the way. I find it repulsive.
I've not been.
No, well,
whatever way I see it, it's going to make like I've been, and I'm denying it. So,
yeah, don't protest too much. But no, I just read their about beautiful people thing. It's the most ugly thing in the whole of the internet, as far as I can tell.
Oh, that's seen a lot. And that's us, our first show of the year. If you want to find out more about us, our website is digitaloutbox.com. Where you'll find all the information you need about podcasts. We'll also do some in-depth, sometimes, posts about our picks. And as I've already mentioned, I'm going to be doing a series of posts about my new Mac Mini and how I'm setting it up and how I'm going to use it as a media center PC. Is that right, Colin?
Yeah, so
a media center PC.
You can do that, yeah. So that's going to be a good place to go. If you are thinking along those lines, then keep an eye on Digital Outbox, because the first one came out read well.
And I've got, I guess, in my head, I've got something like 10, 12 posts kind of mapped out as to how I want to take people through, and there'll be one up the next sort of 2 or 3 days just about setting up the Mac to be a bit more streamlined and the services you don't need and the essential things for media playback.
Okay.
We've also got our Twitter account, which is Digital Outbox. Our Skype account, Digital Outbox. We'd love to hear from you. So if you've got any questions, queries, you want to do some reviews for us, you want to make a contribution, we'd love you to do that. And if you want to email us, info@digitaloutbox.com, and we will try and respond as quickly as possible.
Can I just say thanks to the people that have given us some reviews on iTunes. We always like reviews on iTunes. And if you're listening, have enjoyed it, we would love you to go and do the same.
We'd love you. We'd probably pay, to be honest. We are that desperate.
Again, we don't like to make those kind of... We'll do it secretly, though. We'll give it a code word as well.
Yeah. The code word is
bribery.
Desperate, I think. And Chris, what about you?
So my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk, and I am on Twitter as CheesyUK.
Fantastic. My blog is ind.net. And my Twitter account is Sweeper, and I hopefully be making more posts this year. Must make more posts on the blog.
Yes, I have a resolution of that coming along that line as well.
Resolutions. And on that note, join us again next week. Catch you later on.
Bye.
Bye. I was going to mention resolutions, but then I chickened out.
What, have you made some that are not announceable?
No, it was just one of the resolutions was to make this podcast a lot better. And, and to be honest, that's the best podcast of 2010 so far. So
I think all that have come before in 2010 have paled in significant. Well, I can't even talk.
No, I've not got too many. Well, I think I blogged them. To be honest, maybe I didn't.
I haven't even made one official one yet. I'm very bad at keeping them, so what's the point?
Well, you have. You've just told everybody you're going to blog more.
That's kind of a virtual one, though, isn't it? Oh, I don't know. Yeah, okay, fair enough.